Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends. I am your host, Jason Hobbs. And as always, so far anyway, I am joined by a fantastic guest. This guest has been around the OSR for quite a while. Old time blogger, writer. Some of his items are the Hack and Slash blog, the Mega Dungeon zine, and the Eerie of the Dread Eye. He is none other than Courtney Campbell. How's it going, Courtney?
Pretty good. This is now my favorite podcast on the internet.
It is now or it is not?
It is now.
I'm pretty sure it already was. You just didn't know it yet.
Yeah, I think so.
So how long have you been doing the blog?
Oh, geez, 2008. Felt like I was a late comer because Grognardia had already been going for 2 years.
Yeah, but there's not too many other ones that are older than that, are there?
Time has moved on, absolutely. And we've lost a lot of great blogs that have gone by the wayside. But yeah, I mean, I remember feeling like I had to play catch up with what was going on. I was in Alaska when Grognardia started.
Well, I mean, if you were having to play catch up, just think of all the people that didn't start until last year.
Yeah. I think OSR was more like describing a group of people who are still playing second edition AD&D, right? Like, we were all there. I was running a Hackmaster game in like 2005, like right when it was published or whatever. And just knowing that there were other people who were writing about the weird thing I was doing kind of was what drew me into it.
It is a large and massive topic, and we will skirt around the edge of it unless we get deep into it later.
Absolutely.
So as far as Hack and Slash goes, is there anything you wanted to talk about specifically and tell people to check out?
Yeah. I in the blog.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Well, it's actually been kind of difficult choosing how to present things on the blog in the recent years since the collapse of 2+ and everything. I'm almost interested in there's a lot of resources there, and I often post snapshots of the new stuff I'm working on, and I've been putting out a lot of art lately. But it feels like a lot of the focus has been on producing publishable material. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So you're on what issue of Mega Dungeon? 4?
Yeah, we just published 4 on the cover by Bodhi H. It covers a pair of linked sections of the Mega Dungeon. Each one has a window that looks down into a guarded treasure room. And so they present temptations to players along with a puzzle as how to figure out how to get to the place you can see.
So what is Mega Dungeon? I'm not sure if everyone has it or not. Maybe you want to give a quick brief synopsis.
Sure. I started working on a Mega Dungeon titled Numen Hala about the week before my daughter was born, right? Because you get off work and you're in the hospital and you're waiting. And I had this big notebook with graph paper. And I started putting it together, and it was really an exploration about, coherent fantasy sort of funhouse Mega Dungeon, but that has verisimilitude. You don't want to draw people out. And I wanted it to present puzzles to players, and I wanted to use my insight into how people respond to things from my years of social work and psychology to present puzzles that send mixed signals. And there's for example, there's a section of the dungeon where there's a minotaur hunting the area. And when you go in, you're trapped by a door that locks, and the exit is gotten to by heading towards the center and going down, which is sort of the opposite type of action people want to take when they're in unknown territory, right? And so it presents this conflict of they're draining their resources until they gain the insight while they're playing, like, oh, hey, maybe the way out of here is to go into the area that looks more dangerous and then we can leave.
Interesting. I forgot about that. The No, Numen Hala, that is pretty awesome.
Thanks.
Did you do Was that part of the flail snail stuff, or was that?
It was. Oh my goodness, I hadn't thought about that in a long time. Yeah, I was running Newman Halla on Saturdays for about 4 years, and then we would have occasional Monday and Tuesday night pickups for whoever was around, and it was really, except for I played in Jeff Rant's game. Newman Halla was really the one where I got to meet the most members of the OSR because they'd want to come in and say hi. And so it was really cool. There were, I think at one point, over 180 people rotating in and out.
Yeah, that's crazy. No one, I don't think anyone realizes now what flails. I never actually played a flail snails game, but I always saw people talking about them.
Yeah, yeah. It's a linked set of fantasy realms. Like, people would show up with other campaign stuff. Like, Arnold K gave out a motorcycle. Thanks, Arnold. It was powered by blood, so it was okay. But like, you know, like you'd be like, oh, where'd you get that? And you'd be like, somebody'd be like, well, Jeff gave it to me, or other people we don't talk about anymore. You know,
no kidding. Awesome. Yeah, I should have put that on the outline, but I hadn't even thought about it. All right, so let's move on. So a lot of times I'll talk about how I have met my guests or how they have became a friend of Hobbs, and obviously G Plus. We were talking briefly about the one argument on G Plus that I remember. I had known who you were well before this, but
yeah,
arguing with the pundit about who you were or why you had OSR cred was very bizarre, but that's not what I remember.
Yeah, well, everybody meets a new person and has them come into awareness at some point, right? So, I mean, and that seems to be his normal response to that situation. I think G Plus is kind of like Woodstock, right? Like, it's a thing that's gone now and people just can talk about how they were there, you know?
And we do. It seems like every episode I'm doing, because obviously that's where I've gathered most of my friends from.
Yeah. And yeah, absolutely. It's where the community formed.
Yeah, for sure. So that was pretty fun. And then the other one, I don't know if you recall, but we played in a play test of Glenn Seal's Murder Knights of Corvindark.
It was so fun. And like, I was so surprised when I was like looking at it when it got released. And I was like, oh, I wish I could get that. I wish I had the money to get that. And then it just showed up in my email. And he was like, thanks for doing this. And I was like, holy crap, I'm really excited. It's great. I love all his stuff. I got the Midderlands expanded and like his characters, Glenn Seal's Monkey Blood illustration. His characterizations are great. It's a good time. It was a good time.
It is fantastic. We also talked that you had never listened to the show, but the last episode that I released was actually this morning, and it was Glenn.
Oh yeah, that's cool. He's doing good. Yeah, is he doing good? I'm going to listen to the episode and find out. Just like everybody listening to this should do.
That's right. You should, and hopefully there are lots of people listening to this. So anyway, that was pretty fun. Tim Shorts was running that.
He's a great guy. I love playing with him.
Tim is awesome. It was me, you, Matt Jackson.
And I don't remember. Tim and Matt have Patreons too, right? Oh, they do. Matt does little one-page dungeons, and Tim's really getting into the oh my goodness, his colors are so good now.
It's different than it was. He's doing very well. I love both of those guys, and I game with them as much as possible. Who else was in?
They're cool.
It seems like there was one other guy.
No, my memory is not very good.
You didn't remember.
I have no recollection. Well, I, you know, like, it's easier with things than people.
Isn't it? It is for me. Yeah. Awesome. Well, so I know that you have a Twitch channel. Is that the only thing that you run or play in? Or like, this is basically the segment of the show where I talk about what I've been playing since the last episode. What have you been playing? Do you know?
Well, this situation I'm in, it's kind of a dream. I play a lot of D&D, and I don't think a lot of people do play a lot of D&D, and I feel very lucky that I have the opportunity to. I play in like 4 different games. I am running a game for my family on the weekends. I have a game with my friends in town. We're currently playing Pathfinder, that we've played everything from Hackmaster to you know, well, everything, 5th edition. And I'm on Tuesday nights, I'm playing a 1st edition game with Chicago Wiz. that takes place in his shared Eternia world. On the alternate Tuesday nights, I'm running a game of Perdition online for some other Twitch streamers. And I'm sure I'm forgetting a game. There's a lot of D&D going on, and it's a good time. When I was a kid, I never thought that not only would I be able to play D&D this much, but that I could, you know, have it be part of how I make a living.
That is the dream, like you said. Is that all you're doing now? Is
Yep, every day. And it is a dream. It's awesome. Yeah, I'm not going to lie to anybody. It's fantastic.
What the? You want to talk about your Twitch game at all?
Yeah, it's Perdition. It's a BX-inspired rule set involving a prime material plane that's been conquered by devils and has to repel demonic invasions. And it's got sort of a Western aesthetic. Like, there's also a lot of rules in there for politicking among demons and devils. I kind of have a thing for metagame systems that create opportunities for players to take action, right? So Perdition has a lot of those, and we've got some great Twitch streamers and artists and creators. Bodhi, the guy who did the cover for the most recent Mega Dungeon, he plays with us. My friend Sudo, who is an ex-RPG author. He's the author of the game Final Girl. He plays with us. He's a great variety streamer. He's one of my best friends. And then, you know, the girls there, Kitchen Wiz, she's a seamstress. She makes cosplay costumes for people. And Insomnia Doodles, who's an artist and does all kinds of digital art and other things on stream. And it's just the community on Twitch is great, man. There's so many artists that work on role-playing game materials. Journeyman, who does stuff for Lamentations, and Neo Realms, who illustrates fantasy app games. Like, it's crazy the people that are out there, and everybody is super welcoming. And it's really one of the first communities I've gone into where everybody is really of the mindset that a rising tide lifts all boats. Your success is not my failure. And everybody's helping each other out. And it's super positive, and I can't believe it.
I have not experienced that yet. I mean, the only person I really talked to is you, but my Twitch stream only started. So
yeah, anyway, you had like 20 viewers or something. You got to understand, most people start their Twitch streams and they start like at zero, and they'll stream for a year to get a regular viewer. But like, I went to your stream and you're streaming your game, and there was 23 people sitting out there. Like, they're there. You stream a couple of times, you drop in somebody else's stream, and they'll be like, hey, I was watching you the other day, right? They won't talk when they're watching you, but they'll bring it up when you go watch them. I mean, like, it's really nice out there.
They do. It does seem very friendly, and honestly, it's not as difficult as I thought. So
I thought it would be much more difficult than it was too. I was scared. Jump in the water side.
It is it's been a great experience. I haven't ran too much because I was gone for my weekly gaming briefly. I'm going to talk about HoffCon 2 in Baltimore.
Wow, the pictures were so good.
Well, thank you. It was at Eric Hoffman's house, and he got us a hotel block and a hotel room for us to play D&D in when we weren't gaming in his basement on his sand table or the sand table nearby. Honestly, I am not a minis guy at all. I own a few, and I own a bunch of Hero Clicks for my D&D type games, but I don't usually play them. He loves them. That's why he goes to conventions, is because of the opportunity to play. And he's got a huge sand table, and as you could see, he knows what the heck he's doing with what he is making and stuff. And it was a blast. To me, it's really just about getting together with my buddies. I was there, Paul Wolf, Jose Licario, Thaddeus Moore.
Oh, dude, I know Thaddeus and Paul.
So those guys were in the pictures that you saw. You just didn't realize that you knew them.
Yeah, Thaddeus, I did. That's exactly right. Thaddeus, I did a commission for him a couple months ago. It's going to be in a product he's publishing. I'm excited. Nice.
Michael Curtis was there gaming with us.
Oh, geez. Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. We had fun. So it was all minis except for one. I ran one session of my BX game at the hotel late after we were already done, had been, you know, minis gaming all day, and it got pretty silly. But maybe not. I don't know if it was silly, right? Because,
fun. Convention yeah, fun.
It was kind of convention fun, exactly. There was only four or five of us, and I was like, oh, just make third level BX characters, and then we'll roll up a single horde, and that's the totality of the money you've made, and then you can buy anything you want out of that. And they bought like 20 camel lancers because it was a desert thing.
Yeah, the fact that when you're in your daily life, you're constantly interacting with people who you share only limited interests. And when you have this really passionate interest and you go in a place where everybody has this really passionate interest, you're like, oh man, I can talk to other actual human beings at length about whatever minutia I'm into, and they will be as into it as I am. Like, it's really a great environment to go. And it looked, the pictures, I was jealous. That's what it was. I saw the pictures. I was like, I wish I was there.
I got more of that than I expected. There was kind of like a social media subtlety to it because it was at his house. So you don't want to get too crazy, but
Well, I understand.
By inviting me, he kind of, I'm on all the social medias. So I had to share what I was doing, but I'm good buddies with Eric. I mean, I've known him for years and we actually do some podcasting together. So it was awesome.
Yeah, it is. I'm terrified of social media. If I didn't need it for my job, if like if it wasn't explicitly a requirement for my job, I'd delete all my accounts.
I understand completely. So let's go everything about you, a segment of the show where we use the Ugly Kid Joe song and talk about something that about ourselves that the listeners may not know. Do you want to go first? Or you want me to?
You all go right, first.
So obviously I'm on episode 53, so I've given out 52 little known facts about the Hobbs. And this time I'm speaking in third person for some reason. But I think for GaryCon, we are going to run a ShadowCon in Lake Geneva during GaryCon, where you can come and hang out because I think it's going to be overrun and they're not going to be prepared for the number of people that are coming. Luke has really partnered with WotC and the 5e people. And so there's going to be a huge influx of people there that aren't normally there. So like I say, I'm going to run a ShadowCon and we're going to try and get the lodge where GaryCon used to take place. So if you're interested in that, let me know. What about you? You got anything, Courtney?
Well, I want to say I understand that, man. We are mainstream now,
yeah.
Which means that when we have an event, it's got to be a mainstream event, and then there has to be a secret event, which is just us hanging out, drinking soda, playing D&D.
That's kind of what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I was born with six toes.
All right. Awesome. Good one.
I had it surgically removed, but they couldn't remove the nerve tissue. So I have an oddly shaped big toe. It makes buying shoes very difficult. Conveniently, I work from home and I live in a robe, so it's not been a problem.
All right. That is fantastic. I think that rivals Jose's time as a professional wrestler. All right. Let's get into the main topic. So that's you.
Oh, well, I have a Kickstarter going on.
Let's talk about it.
We got to talk about it. I mean, that's the thing is that that's what I'm supposed to do. I don't know what I'm doing. I have a book. I put it together. It's about downtime activities. It's what I've been using. It's really a system of procedures that cause your players to become invested in the game. You know, like when you play Civilization, you're like, I'm taking over this map. It's basically like the rules, like a completely BX collection. Some of them aren't even new. They're just organized in a way that's easier for players to grok in the book on downtimes and domain. And there's a bunch of optional stuff, and all of it is generating ideas in your players. Like, oh, I want to do this, or I want to get this. It allows you to be more reactive as a DM, because I like to set up a world and let them explore it. That doesn't mean I don't have evil guys or good guys or plots or anything going on, but it's just sort of the set of tools that I've been using for basic, expert, classic D&D to do that. And then I was running Horde of the Dragon Queen, and so I had to convert everything over to 5e. And so I tested it there a lot, and it seems to be pretty successful. And I didn't know what I was expecting. I was expecting, I don't know, I was hoping against hope for 500 people and, you know, making like 5 or 6K, right? And it's gone completely beyond my wildest expectations, and I'm humbled by it. It's incredible.
All right. It's interesting to me because, first of all, I think I wanted to mention Perdition, but I had forgot you had done that. And you did that through just Lulu and just published it, right? You didn't do anything else?
Yeah, absolutely. And the you know, it was an expensive project, right? Like there's 4 plates of art from Russ Nicholson in there, and Matthew Adams did about a dozen pieces, and he did the cover. Like I really put a lot of myself into that. Yeah. It's a great, it's BX. If you're playing basic classic Dungeons and Dragons, you'll instantly know it, but it's got some cool stuff in there. You know, it's got some more crunchy bits for more modern players, and there's a lot of mechanics that I'm real proud of.
It is a cool product. And I bring it up again because I was wondering if you would contrast doing the Kickstarter versus what you did when you did Perdition.
So what I would say is that for many months, I have had people who I respect offhandedly mention, you know, Kickstarter is a great marketing tool. I would have to say they're correct.
And do you want to say why or?
Yeah, I mean, like if I had done this and just released it on DriveThruRPG, it wouldn't have made nearly as big a splash.
Because people are excited about the new thing, or you can market it easier because it's a website and it has a bunch of new tools, or what? Like, can you?
I think that there's a level of community and excitement. I've noticed that there's groups of people that have moved into my project. And because it's to their interest, they've spread it to their friend groups. It seems very much the way you can communicate. It is a marketing tool, I think, essentially. I mean, like what I should say is, you know, something to make people buy the Kickstarter, but like the truth is that it's a tool to spread hype. And that scared me a little bit. I didn't want to sell hype. I wanted to sell a tool. And so one of the things I did when I was putting together the Kickstarter is I made sure that it was done and that anybody who backed got it. Like, I'm still going to pay Sandor a bunch of money to go through and edit it, right? And I'm going to pay Carl for a beautiful cover. Every cover I've ever gotten is beautiful. I don't know how I've gotten so lucky. I mean, I really feel that way. I give them a lot of freedom, and I tell them, you know, the aesthetic I want. I let them go. And every time somebody hands me something, it's been beautiful. I'm thankful is what I am. And you know, there's stuff to be done, but the entire text is finished. Right. It's there. You back it. You get the whole thing. You can read it. If you don't like it, unback. Like I didn't want to sell a thing. How many times have I backed a Kickstarter? 2 years later, I get something and I'm like, wow, I regret that. But it's hard to feel like acute regret because the money has been so far gone. I don't even remember spending it. Right.
For sure. Buyer's regret on Kickstarter is like its own thing for sure.
Right. And I didn't want to do that to people. So when they back it, they know exactly what it is. Everything is there.
That is risky in some ways, but it's definitely admirable.
I was told by absolutely everyone not to do that. 100%. They said, do not do that. One of the things I like to ensure, like you can't trust people. They will lie right to your face. But when I hand somebody a piece of art, or when I listen to somebody or watch somebody go through something I've written and they do this, I know that I've won. Like, that's it. That's good enough. And people, when they were reading the book, you know, I'd hear them flip through and I'd hear, there's a bunch of really good stuff in here. And I'd be like, well, they're not faking that. So I felt confident. I think it could have been a terrible idea, but it seems to be working out.
Well, I have backed it, but I did not look at it yet. I was busy over the weekend. Did you want to talk about any of the trials and tribulations that you had for your Kickstarter?
Oh yeah, there were some. Like my project got denied. I first of all, like I because I'm I mean, like, I'm Generation X. I'm 42 or 43. I was born in 1977. Like, I'm just not paying attention to what the web page is telling me. Like, I've programmed an assembly before. I maintain a roguelike in C. Like, I'm familiar with computers, right? I work, you know, putting art into them, doing digitally. I've a ton of experience repairing them, writing code for them. But, you know, like, I just want it to work now. I don't want to have to figure out, you know, I don't have to read the entire instruction manual, get my computer to do what I want. I just want to push the button and make the internet go. And I missed the little thing. I filled out everything, but they were like, there's a 200 character, not word, character box that's a bio. And I didn't fill it out. And so I waited for like 5 days. And I was like, why is my project not being approved? And of course, they sent the email back. And it was like, well, because you're an idiot. You haven't finished applying. And so after I went through that process and I did it, you know, I got sent. And then 3 days later, they came back and they're like, yeah, no, we don't do gambling. And I was like, that's weird. Because I'm pretty sure that my Kickstarter is a book. And so I had to appeal. And then, you know, I was like, hey, guys, there's no gambling here. You know, I've changed the language so that it doesn't confuse anybody. It's clearly a book. Because I was doing a break Kickstarter promotion and we were going to vote. That was going to be how we were going to change it up. Like, people would decide what's in the book. And... Well, I fixed everything and I sent it back and I said, look, this is an RPG book. You guys do this all the time. Please approve me. And then they did. Originally, the campaign was going to be 20 days, but I because of that delay, it's only 10. And now I'm thankful for that. First of all, I don't think I could have done 20 days of a Kickstarter campaign. And secondly, I don't think you need 20 days in a Kickstarter campaign.
When people know how long it is, that's kind of all that they really need the rest of the time. What happens in 10 days? I guess more marketing, maybe? I'm not sure.
Yeah, you're supposed to build hype. And I've been doing okay. I mean, I think my expectations have been incredibly suppressed. So I feel like I'm doing fine. But it's exhausting. I couldn't have done it for more than 10 days. Like, we're going to reach a crescendo and then it's going to be done. I don't know how anybody could keep it going for that long. You can't sleep. You're busy all the time. You're responding to the Kickstarter. You're talking to people. It's like you're wired. You know, you can't calm down because you got this thing going on. And I just can't sustain that. I'm impressed by everybody who did. Anybody who does, they really deserve their success for sure.
Awesome. All right. So I got you here. Like you said, you are a longtime member way back in the OSR, specifically the G+ community of the OSR, I guess. Yeah, do you want to talk a little bit about, people talk about toxicity in the OSR. Have you experienced that, or what do you think about that?
Well, it's very nuanced, which is a bad thing to talk about on the internet. <That's true>. because you know, you don't want to say it. I mean, like, it's a complicated, many faceted thing, right? Like is even saying something like, what type of attention is bad attention? Because for some people, like, they went a long time getting bad attention and it went very well for them, but then there's a line, and when they cross it, it's over, right? And you can't really address complicated topics with nuance, because there's so many people are genuinely different, and it's difficult to connect with other people and to understand different perspectives. And I think everybody is facing that challenge, right? And it's not new. People were worrying and trying to figure out how to love their neighbor 4,000 years ago. Like, this is the essential problem, the essential puzzle conundrum of the human being, right? And normally, you can be like, I just have to worry about Fred and the guys that are here around. But now you have to worry about the entire world. There's nothing, I guarantee you, like, I don't know anybody who has my identical set of beliefs. And so everybody's going to have something that they're going to disagree with me about. Right?
That's absolutely true. So that kind of takes us full circle when we talk about Eerie of the Dread Eye, the project you did for Adventure Conqueror King. How did that change? I mean, I'm very familiar with the Autark effect on people and their businesses. Or
It's intense. And like, it part of the reason I went ahead and talked to Alex is I was experiencing dissonance myself. Like, these statements that people are making about Alex don't seem to, they don't seem to line up with facts that I have. And so, you know, I'm a super aggressive guy. And so I just was like, hey, Alex, what the fuck is this? Like, is there any truth to this? Are you a Nazi sitting on a hoard of Nazi gold trying to, you know, oppress all people? And I just talked to him for a long time. And because, you know, maybe he's telling me bullshit. You know, I didn't want to be snowed and I have been snowed. And you know, like, that's a thing that people can do. But the thing is Alex isn't a malignant narcissist, right? He's the guy, like, when I was in kindergarten, I was sitting on the playground reading the player's handbook, right? Alex was the guy sitting on the playground figuring out all the mathematical structure to the rules of the player's handbook and correcting it. Like, that's just the type of person that he is. He's just, he's a gamer. He's like the... like, his college admission essay was his submission of a role-playing game he had made to Harvard. He graduated from Harvard Law. It's not like you could just coast through on that, right? And a lot of people will say, well, it doesn't matter, you know, like, how many gay or trans people he's hired, or, you know, like, the fact that his economics professor was Elizabeth Warren. Like, nobody cares about any of that. What they care about is that he had a business association with somebody who's a toxic, repugnant person. And I cared about that. I confronted him about that, you know, and he's like, that is the worst person ever. And what was presented to me was not the situation I was in. And when he was telling me that, I was thinking about the person that we don't talk about anymore and exactly how that mirrored my experience with him. And so I spent some time around him to listen. And then I found out that there's a lot of propaganda out there and a lot of agendas, and they don't match the reality of the situation, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I saw that you came into my discussion about me re-releasing the Macris episode a few weeks ago now.
What a hard situation. What a difficult, scary, terrifying thing to do.
Absolutely. So it was interesting.
I mean, I'm talking about my anxiety before I announced that Alex was part of the project that I'm working on now. I love Axe. I love BX. And Axe is like a BX with a really super cool steel reinforced frame underneath it. Like, that's cool. Like, it's a lot of fun as a DM. It's like, and I wanted to know, you know, is this real? And it's not real. Like, he's a great guy. He's not out there doing evil. He's politically different from me and other people, but then everybody is, you know. You and I don't share all the same political views. He and I don't share all the same political views, but essentially he shares the view that all human beings have the same unique thing and we're all part of the same organism and we all deserve, you know, positive regard. And that matches my statement. I'm a big fan of Carl Rogers, unconditional positive regard. I spent 20 years in psych working with disabled youth and teenagers, you know, behavioral teenagers, people with drug addiction, alcohol problems, sex crime offenders. Like, nothing makes some of the stuff they've done okay, but it doesn't make me hate them. They're suffering. Like, all humans are suffering everywhere. It's rough out there, right? So I just want to have a little love.
I would say, don't we all? But then I guess I shouldn't say that. But I certainly...
I think they do. I think even the most hateful and bitter and miserable people out there, the reason that they've been aligned or maligned with the wrong people often, like... As somebody who's worked with unconditioning people and unradicalizing people in psych, it almost universally comes from seeking a place to belong.
I believe that. That's interesting. So, pretty great conversation there. I guess my last question about that would be, you have a credit in The Secret Manticore, which was a kind of a parody of The Secret Santa Corps, an OSR project by the MBC. How has your affiliation after writing Eerie of the Dread Eye and having Macris be involved in your current project, how has that affected maybe your a membership to the MBC or just in general the people that you used to basically maybe align yourselves with in the G+ community?
I mean, I know exactly what you're asking, and what I'd like to say is that I really love all those guys. but I don't want to push it off. The situation did not happen because, like, my association with Alex was entirely independent of that. But it, like, I'm very sensitive. I don't watch horror movies. I don't like to put things in my head. And a lot of times I was experiencing a lot of dissonance. So part of my withdrawal from that was me not being able to cope or being uncomfortable with the things that, you know, I was, not because anything was wrong, but just because I like romantic comedies, you know, like my work and everything is, you know, grotty and, you know, weird and Jim Henson-y and labyrinthy and everything. You know, I like to call my adventures, they have a grotty Muppet aesthetic, right? But like, it's just, they dealt and talked about a lot of things that I had trouble internalizing and coping with. And so that sort of created a divide. There were, you know, you get close to people online when you game, and then you experience something in psychology known as the attraction repulsion duality, where you feel very attracted to somebody, but they have a character trait that is opposite or incompatible with one of yours. And I was experiencing that very strongly with some of them. Like, a part of the thing is that I love everybody in that community. But obviously, if I spend too much time around some of them, we begin to, you know, argue about stuff and have disagreements. And I don't want that on anybody.
And I think that is just a reflection on life in general, which most small microcosms of life are microcosms of life. So they have the same tendencies and similarities and a lot of the same things that happen. And like you said previously, we're all gamers, but we're all individuals as well that aren't always going to mesh. So if we have something that is together or fits what we all like gaming, like at a tribe for a con or whatever, it's wonderful. But it's also possible that some of these traits that they people have are not going to be compatible with our own. And it's certainly okay to, you know, cut ties with people. It doesn't mean you don't like them. It doesn't mean any of those things. It just means some things are incompatible. So I really appreciate you talking about it.
Well, too, I also think that G Plus was dying, and psychologically with the end, all communities end, right? Sooner or later. And with the ending of that community and it being like a date on the calendar and everybody could point at it, I think there was a lot of people addressing things that they had held their breath because they weren't sure, like, how things were going to go in the future. Since it was ending, since we're leaving, I might as well go ahead and open up about all the things that I've really been feeling. And I think we saw that in a lot of different sectors.
Yeah, there was some bad, there was a lot of good. It felt like people were just saying, well, it's almost over, so kumbaya and see you later. And it was...
Yeah. As many different responses to it as there were people
just
involved
like
in it.
The OSR. Awesome, man. So I've really appreciated the discussion. I should give some shout outs to my patrons. Isaac Eccles, he is one of my brothers in Dudes on Oils and a believer in essential oils like myself. Isaac, thanks for being a patron. Mark Diamante, he found his way into the Kalmata community and has really came into his own there. Thanks for playing, Mark. Thanks for being a patron. And Frank Brooks, my old buddy from Oklahoma. Thanks for being a patron, brother. I appreciate it. If anyone else wants to be a patron and get shout outs like those three dudes, go to www.patreon.com/OSRN Hobbs. Do you have a patron you want to pimp or anything?
I do. My patron is, let me make sure I get the address here. It's Hackenslash, all lowercase, I guess, because it's a blog post. I stream on Twitch as Agonark Artist. I have a blog I run called Hackenslash, and I've got a Kickstarter right now going on called Downtime and Domain. And if you'd like to check it out, you can just see everything I wrote for a dollar and see why the response has been crazy. I'm like literally stunned. I had no expectation that it would happen.
I think
like
a
that.
Lot of fans of this show and our sister podcast, Hex Talk, you are interested in the downtime and how you can make that fun and interesting. And it really kind of, it sounds like your aesthetic for the book fits what a lot of people want: random tables and just some guidance and inspiration, as opposed to, hey, do it this way. So I think it's really going to be popular with the Mr. Hobbs's Gamerhood community. So I appreciate you coming on. I should tell you how you can get a hold of me, although you should all know: Twitter at Hobbs Indeed, or the show's Twitter feed at OSRN Hobbs. We got groups on Facebook, MeWe, Audio Dungeon Discord. I have a Google phone number. Call in, be on the air, 815-204-894. You got an email or anything? If someone had a question about your tips on tricks, tricks on tips, what?
Yeah, I think, you know, that we're going to be doing another Kickstarter in the future. And so that's a good candidate, I think. I think for where we're headed next. Yeah, my email is campbell@ook.cz. That's lowercase OOOK dot nice. CZ.
Mine is hobbs@hobbsandfriends.com. All right, Courtney, we've come to the end. Do you have any famous last words?
Don't be a stranger.
That's right. Mr. Hobbs's Gamerhood appreciates you being involved. People, be good. Love each other. Won't you be my gamer? Take us away, TJ.
It's a beautiful day in the